Hello everybody and welcome to this new episode. My name is Sarah and this is Amsterdamers, the podcast that introduces you to amazing women from Amsterdam. When it comes to money and finances, women often end up with the short end of the stick. They are being short-changed, if you will, because women are facing financial obstacles that men are not facing. The gender pay gap is just one example for that. Reason enough for women to start taking care of their own finances and to work towards financial independence. Jonelle van der Waal is a money mindset coach and host of the podcast Up Your Money. And today we're going to talk about how girls are socialized when it comes to money, the so-called girl math, and some basic steps for you to build up your savings. Welcome, Jonelle van der Waal. Thanks for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
How did it happen that you started working in the field of money and finances? What was the reason for you to start that?
Well, I never actually set out to work in money or finance. I'm also an English teacher, so I started off in education. And after a few years, I just thought, I don't want to do this until I retire. So I started looking for something else. And then I stumbled on coaching because I love working with people. I love inspiring, helping others, motivating them. So I thought, okay, then I want to be a coach. And while I was working with my own business coach, she asked me, like, what kind of coach do you want to be? And I've always been interested in finances, interested in money. My parents taught me how to handle my money from a very young age. They taught me about investing. So I've always been interested in it. And then I thought, well, I think it's really cool to combine the two. So helping others, but also money and finance, because especially for women, I think there's still a lot more that we can do. I think a lot of finance education is centered on men. Also, if you look in the finance world, a lot of it is based or made for men. So I thought this is the perfect combination. My passion for helping people, my passion for money, inspiring and empowering women, it all came together. And that's how I started doing what I do.
You already mentioned women, and that is obviously the topic of this episode. But let's maybe for one more question talk about the country of the Netherlands in general. Because globally, in comparison, it is, of course, a very rich country. There's a lot of high income, even though, of course, we also have different social classes and there are people who are living in poverty. But do you think, from your perspective, that there is sufficient knowledge or sufficient information on how to handle money sustainably in this country?
Yes and no. I think probably compared to other countries, it's probably quite good here in the Netherlands, but I do think there's still a lot that we can work on. Like I said, I'm a teacher, so if I look at the education system, I think we learn or our students learn a lot about economics. We learn a bit about the theory behind it. So the types of different businesses that you can have or whatever, but it's not very practical. Nobody teaches us how to keep a budget. Nobody teaches us how to set up your investment account or how to do your taxes. So yes, I think there is some education on the topic. I don't think it's very practical or ready to use. So there's still a lot of room for improvement.
I can actually second that. I remember when I went to high school, I was able to write an analysis of a poem in three languages, but nobody taught me how to do a tax report. Like, I'm still completely clueless. From your perspective, is the average woman, whatever that means, of course, in the Netherlands financially independent?
Yes, well, it depends on what definition of financial independence you use. I think there's two definitions. So on the one hand, financial independence means that you can pay your own bills and you don't have to rely on others like a partner or the government to help you to pay whatever you need to pay and to, get your groceries and whatever. And I know that almost half of women in the Netherlands is not financially independent in this way. So half of all women are dependent on either a partner or on the government. But the other definition of financial independence is something that is coming up right now. You have the FIRE movement, which stands for financial independence, retire early. And that means that you are basically work optional. So you don't have to work and you get like a passive income from all your investments or other things. And you can basically just do whatever you want to do, spend your time how you want to spend your time. And that is something that is coming up more and more. And also there, not a lot of women are financially independent in that way.
What are the factors that play into this? What do we have to look at? I would think the gender pay gap, probably motherhood, maternity leave, part-time jobs. Am I forgetting something?
No, you're not. It's all of these things. And I think for all of these, because it's easy to say, well, women don't make as much money because they don't ask for a raise or whatever. It's easy to say that. And I think, yes, that is also part of the reason. But all of these things start with how we raise our children, with our money mindset, with our perception of money. I think boys and men are stimulated from a young age to make money. Money is like a status symbol for them. Men are taught to be assertive, to negotiate for promotions. They are seen as the providers. So people teach them how to be that, how to be the provider, how to make a lot of money, how to invest and all those types of things. Whereas girls and women from a young age are stimulated to do quite the opposite, actually. So we as women were taught to give and to take care of others. We're taught not to ask for too much and be happy with what we receive. So in the whole of society, our whole perspective on money for men is like money is important. You need money to be important, to be of value. And for women, money is just not that important, at least we're told. So yes, the gender pay gap is one of the reasons for that. Also, women often work part-time more often than men. They take maternity leave, they become mothers. So I feel like that is because we are taught that money is not as important for us. We don't need it as much.
I also think there's a very interesting narrative that I recently came across that is related to care work that mostly women do in a family. And it is this idea of, no, but I love my children and I love my family. Of course, I wouldn't get paid for that. But in the end, this sums up to hundreds and thousands of hours of work that remain unpaid. And if we also throw the gender pay gap in the mix, that results in potentially poverty in a higher age because women never had the chance to build up savings as much as men
definitely. Had. Yeah. If you look at the statistics, women in general earn less than men, but they also have less savings. They have less just capital. They have less assets, everything. And yes, motherhood is important and all the unpaid labor that women do is very important, but it's also important to have money and to build wealth also for your family, build wealth that you can give to your children when they get older.
I recently had a conversation with a friend of mine. He has a fixed contract. He works 4 days per week and he has a stable income in that sense. And me, in comparison, I am a freelancer. I never have a stable income per month and I work in journalism, which is not paid great to start with.
Yeah.
But we were just thinking, if we lived together, would it actually be fair? Me as a feminist thinking, should it be 50-50? Because I want to be equal in every sense of the word. But then I was thinking, am I not shooting myself in the foot? Because I'm not making the same money, but I have the same costs if we share it equally 50-50.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you have to take into account all the other things, right? So you have the financial aspect, but you also have who does the household work, who takes care of potential children. So it's not just that it should be 50-50 financially, it should be 50-50 like everywhere. You have to take everything into account. So if you live with someone who has a stable income, which is the same every month, and someone who has a freelance income, I think you should look at percentage-wise who makes more money and what does it come to at the end. And then you should contribute to your percentage.
I recently saw a trend on social media called girl math, and I'm still not sure whether I should be offended by this or not. I think it started in a radio show in Australia. Don't quote me on that. It could be wrong. But they had women call in and talk about how they justify to themselves spending money in the most ridiculous way.
Yeah.
And you already spoke about how girls or women are socialized, that money is not the thing for them, that this is something the man takes care of. Does this really reflect how women deal with money? Obviously, it's a parody. It's not all serious. I get that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if we present women that way and female capability of handling money, we're going in circles, right?
Yes. Well, I have so much to say about the girl math trend.
Please do.
First of all, I'm not a fan. I don't know. On the one hand, it is funny. I've seen a few of the videos. I'm like, yeah, that's funny. Also, I'm guilty of doing some of those things as well. On the other hand, I do feel that it's the type of humor that is like self-deprecating. So I don't know if it's the best way to go about it. Also, it normalizes not handling your money well, I think. But I've also seen a few videos where I think like, yeah, that makes sense. That is actually good math. Like the math is mathing. So yeah, it's funny, but I don't think it's very supportive of women. And then also, on the one hand, it is true. Women do spend money in silly ways sometimes. And like I said, I'm guilty of doing some of those things as well. But I do think that those, or handling your money that way, it comes from a place of ignorance and not knowing how money works or how the quote unquote money game works. And that is because of what we just discussed. Women are not being taught these things. We are not taught to put importance on making money, building investments, or building our wealth, saving up for retirement, which is actually quite sad. It shouldn't be that way. And so I think a big part of it is ignorance and not being aware of things, not being educated on certain topics. And then on the other hand, it's also completely not true, because it is shown that women are better investors than men, and women handle money better than men. And also traditionally in certain communities, women were often like the accountants of the household. So men were responsible for maybe the big things, sure, but the women were responsible for the day-to-day. The women were responsible for making sure that ends were met at the end of the month. The women were responsible for doing the groceries and making sure that the children have enough clothes and stuff like that. So I feel like women are just so resourceful, and in a way the girl math also shows this. We are so resourceful when it comes to our money. We can make money where there is no money. We can make free money where there is no money by doing our girl math things. And think of single mothers, for example, making sure that their kids have everything they need, working multiple jobs, and I don't know, it's just some kind of magic they do they have 2-3 jobs and it's almost impossible for them to pay everything, but they make it work. So women are very resourceful. I think women are very good with money, but we do need to be educated in making money work for us, even when we're not in like a position of poverty or whatever.
I have to say, I'm quite surprised when I started educating myself on this topic, how many women in my private life among my friends don't want to touch finance. And it could be a cultural thing, because I remember I was raised with that idea, money is something we do not talk about. And I don't think it was based on my gender. I think it was more a cultural thing. But yeah, they seem to happily give that to their husbands or partners. I actually spoke to a woman who said she gets an allowance from her husband because she's not good with money.
Oh, wow.
And I wasn't really sure what I should respond to that.
Well, I don't necessarily think that women are raised to think that someone else is going to take care of money for them. Like I said, I think it's mostly that women just aren't taught how important money is. And also they're not taught how much of a valuable tool money actually is. And if you don't know that something is important, if you don't know what you can do with money, then obviously you're not going to care for it as much. And so I think a huge, huge thing is that we need to educate women and bring more awareness and make women realize that money and things like investing, it's not just for men and it's not just for old white men. It's for everyone, and everybody needs money. And I'm just thinking, what's also important is that we teach women that when they do have a partner or a relationship and a husband, that that does not mean an equal security. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, your partner could, well, I don't know, cheat on you or whatever, but it could also be that something happens and they pass away. Like, it doesn't always have to be that your partner is a bad person. But what if your partner passes away and you don't know how to handle your money? What then? Yeah.
I actually had that case in my family when my uncle passed away. My aunt, she was completely clueless when it came to insurance, paying off the house, all of these things. But I think we also, all of us, need to keep in mind money could be life-saving, quite in the literal sense of the word. If you have to leave your partner and, for example, you have to pay the rent by yourself and you have to support your children by yourself, whatever the reason might be for you that you have to do that, if you can't do that due to your financial situation, that could be extremely risky.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Money means options. It means freedom. It means choices. And if you don't have your own money, you don't have those things. Like you said, if the situation is not good, you want to leave the situation, it's not possible if you don't have any money. And I've seen it so many times. You had this Facebook group like Amsterdam Durf te Vragen, where you could just ask for favors, information, whatever. And I've seen it so many times that women post like, I'm on the street, I divorced from my partner, I don't have a house, I have 2 children. Like, does anyone know anything, or does anyone have like a room for rent or whatever? And it's heartbreaking, actually, because it doesn't have to be that way. I always also tell my friends, like, you should be enrolled to like the Woningnet for getting social housing. Like, even if you have a partner, you don't know what's gonna happen. You should always have like a backup. You should always have a little bit of money so that you can leave these situations. And I mean, in the best situation, it all goes well. And still then you have that risk of, you know, what happens if your partner passes away or whatever. In a medium situation, you have to ask for things all the time. Like you said, with the woman that you spoke to, she gets an allowance. And it will probably not feel good, right? To not have your own money, to have to ask for things all the time. And it also leaves you in a position for your partner to judge you. Oh, did you go out and spend my money again on, I don't know, a Chanel handbag or whatever? Oh, did you buy those expensive skincare cream stuff things again? So it puts you in a position where your partner can judge you because you're spending their money. And then, like you said, in the worst situation, you're just in a really dangerous environment and you just don't have the option to leave, which is, yeah, horrible.
I actually think the best way to put it is better be safe than sorry.
Yeah.
Because regardless of who you are dating or who you are in a relationship with, I would argue they would want you to be in the safest position as well. And it does not mean that you don't trust that person. It just means you're not completely naively walking into whatever situation might occur.
Yes, definitely. And also, I mean, you're in a relationship or a partnership. It doesn't mean that that is the end of you as an individual. You should always just stay an individual person as well. You should always stay on top of your own financial situation. And even when you're with a partner, I think it's dangerous if you leave all of the finances to the other person and if you don't know anything, because I don't know. I just feel like it's important for you to be on top of things. Like, you live in that household as well. You want to know how you're saving for retirement or whatever. You should be aware of what's going on in your household, and you shouldn't leave that 100% to another person.
Absolutely. A couple of years ago, and I think it's only 2-3 years ago, I started to try to educate myself about investment to get a bit of a passive income. And I realized really quickly that it's one thing to understand that you should know these things and you should care about your own money, and then actually doing it, because I was so overwhelmed and I had no idea what I was reading there. And yeah, I even followed like baby basic podcasts and YouTube tutorials, and I was still like, I have no idea what you're saying. I understand the language, but I still don't know what you're saying. And I think my biggest fear was that I do that one thing wrong and then I'm completely bankrupt and I lost all my money. Like, yeah. Maybe what's your advice for slightly panicky people like me, like who would like to start to educate themselves?
I get that. It is a lot. Like, it is overwhelming. There's so much, especially now with the internet, like there's so much information out there, and I completely understand feeling overwhelmed. Also, I think that investing has a bit of a reputation for being risky. And yes, you can lose all of your money and all of your savings. So yeah, it is overwhelming. It is a bit scary. But I feel like it's only scary if you don't know anything about it. So my first advice would be to find just one good source first and start there. And like I said, there's so much on the internet. So find something or someone that you feel good around, someone that matches your energy, someone whose vibe and words and language you understand. Also someone who has experience, so someone who knows what they're talking about, and just start there. And then second, investing is actually not that hard. It's actually really easy and it's really simple, but you can make it as hard and as difficult as you want. And that is what a lot of the advice that you see online is about. It's about how to become a great investor, how to make lots of money, become a millionaire, make the most profits. Yes, that is difficult, but that is like investing level 10. Level 1, if you want to invest and just invest for old age, for your retirement, it's not that difficult and it doesn't have to be very difficult. You can do it in the most basic way. So I would suggest starting there. It's not that hard. Don't try to become a millionaire overnight, and don't try to take someone else's like level 10 and be like, wow, that's so difficult, I could never do this. Look at level 0, and level 0 is basically just having an amount of money every month, putting it in an investing account and just buying one investment. If you have like the first, let's say, 5 to 10,000 euros invested in one financial product, I would always advise like an ETF, which is an exchange traded fund. It's basically a basket of different stocks. So you can buy, let's say, one that people usually go with is the S&P 500, which is the 500 biggest companies in America. Well, take your first 5 to 10,000 euros and invest it every month in the S&P 500. That's it. Like, that is step one. It's like the most basic thing. And then after a while, when you feel more confident, then you can go to level two. You can choose like a second investment, and then you can choose a third investment, and then you can start thinking about strategy and not just putting money in it every month. But try to, after you get a little bit of profit, take out your profit and then reinvest that in something else. And then you can, so you can start really, really easy and really, really simple, and then just build that up. You don't have to become the best investor before you can start.
You just gave an example of 5,000 up to 10,000 euro, which is already a lot of money. I can imagine that. And I've seen it a lot around that people were kind of doubting themselves with arguments as in, yeah, but I don't have 5,000 to invest. I only have 10 euro per month, or I am already 55 years old. Now it's too late anyway. What do you tell these people?
Well, the 5 to 10,000, I just said, it's not that you have to start with 5 to 10,000. I think for the first 5 to 10,000, you don't really have to think about, oh, I need to be investing in many different stocks. For the first like 5 to 10,000, you can just choose one thing and focus on that. And if you have 10 euros a month, that's fine. It's not, it could be more, but at 10 euros, it's fine. If you have only 10 euros, I would suggest to put that in your, okay, wait, let me explain how an investment account works first, very quickly. It kind of works like a gift card. So when you buy a gift card at the store, you put money on the gift card. So you, let's say you put 50 euros on a gift card for H&M. The money is on the gift card, but it's not doing anything there. You have to spend it at the store to get your clothes in return. And an investment account works the same way. So you put money on your investment account, on the gift card, but it doesn't do anything then. You still have to go out and buy the investment. So it's a two-step process. You put money in the account and then you buy an investment. And when you buy an investment, there is fees. So you pay for transaction fees, processing fees, I don't know. Usually it's like 0.1% or whatever of the trade that you're making, or it's 1 euro per stock or whatever. And because of those fees, I wouldn't advise you to do that every month with 10 euros, because 10 euros is not a lot of money. So if you have to pay 1 euro, let's say every month, you only have 9 left. So if you have 10 euros, I would advise you to put that 10 euros on your investment account, so on the gift card, so it's set away. You cannot spend it accidentally. So put it there and then wait until you have like 50 euros or maybe 70 or 100 euros and then buy an investment. And yeah, so you can start with 10 euros. I would say the sooner you start, the better. Because when it comes to investing, time is more valuable than the amount of money that you put in. And that is because of compound interest. And Einstein called compound interest the 7th or the 8th world wonder. But it's amazing how it works. And it just means that you get interest over your interest. So let me give you an example. Say you put 100 euros in an investing account and you wouldn't have your compound interest. So 100 euros and you get 10% interest. So after a year, you get your 10%, which is 10 euros, and then you have 110 euros. And if you don't have compound interest, the year after that, you also get 10% on your initial investment. So again, 10 euros. So then you have 120, 130, 140, 50, etc. But compound interest means that you get interest over the interest. So at the end of the first year, you got that 10 euros. But then the second year, you get interest not just over the initial investment, but also over that 10 euros. So then you get 11 euros. And it's just 1 euro difference. In this small example, it doesn't make a lot of difference. But if the numbers are a bit bigger, and especially over time, that means that your investment grows exponentially, which means it's gonna like double and triple, like the numbers are gonna go up after like 10, 20 years so quickly. So the best thing is to start early.
So basically what you're saying, something is always better than nothing, obviously.
Definitely, yes, yes.
And I think there's also one thing that we need to take into consideration is the inflation. So if you actually don't do anything with your money, if it's just lying around in your bank account, you're actually losing money without noticing it.
Yes, definitely, definitely. If you put money in a savings account, I think right now interest rates are like 1%. Something like that. But like you said, if you account for inflation, which is like 3-4% per year, that actually means a negative interest of like 2-3%. So you're losing money. And in the stock market, the average interest is like 7%. And then accounting for inflation gives you like 4% on your investments.
So if I understand you correctly, it is about the long game. It is not about making money fast. It is about starting now. So maybe you can actually benefit from it in, I don't know, 15, 20 years, maybe 10. But what about these people that get nervous about the movement of their investment? Because in some apps, you see the up and downs and then you only see red numbers and that's freaking them out. And I am one of these people. So what's your advice?
Well, first of all, I just said that you can make it as easy or difficult as you want, and you don't have to be necessarily in it for the long run. Being in it for the long run, that is the level one that I was talking about. You could also, for example, do day trading, which is very short term, but that is very difficult. So that is more the level 9, level 10. And that is where people maybe get confused, because there's a lot of people online like, yeah, you should try day trading and you can make so much money, which is true, but you can also lose a lot of money. And when you're in it for the long run, the risk also becomes a lot less. So you were talking about the red numbers. Yes, I can imagine that it's a bit scary, but if you know that you're in it for the long run, then it doesn't matter that the numbers are red today, because you don't need that money for another 20, 30, 40 years. You need that money, at the end of your journey. So I think it's important to know that the stock market is going to go up and down and it changes from day to day. That is true. But overall, it's going to go up. It goes like up and down, up and down, up and down. But overall, if you look back on like the past 10, 15, 20 years, it goes up at the end of the day. And that is important to be aware of. Also, I try to see it like this. When the stock market is down and the numbers are red, that means that it's a cheap moment to buy your stocks. If everything is in the red, let's say when COVID hit, my investments, they went down and I was, it was so like my numbers were red. But if at the time I did invest a little bit then, but not that much, but if at the time I had, let's say 10,000 euros and I invested it at that low point, by now that would have like tripled maybe in value. So try to see those lower moments as, oh, that's nice. The stocks are on sale. And this is my chance to buy at a low price because I'm only going to need that money in like 20, 30 years. So this is a good thing. See the red numbers as a good thing.
You have your podcast, Up Your Money, and you work as a money mindset coach. Would you maybe like to share your personal favorite female financial empowerment story?
This is such a difficult question. I have so many. I don't think there's one really big one for me because even the smaller, quote unquote, smaller wins are a big win. Like every time a client texts me, like, for example, I've had clients when I work with them, they were like, yes, my financial goal is to save for a really big trip. I want to go traveling. And then a few months after we stopped working together, I see on their Instagram stories that they're traveling in Asia. And I'm like, yes, they made it happen. That's so cool. Or other clients who end my 3-month program and their net worth has increased with over €1,000 in 3 months. And it's like, yes, that's so cool. But there's also people that haven't even paid to work with me one-on-one, but they just send me a DM and they say, yeah, I listened to the podcast and I was finally able to save a little bit of money at the end of the month instead of always having a bit of month left at the end of their money. So instead of not being able to make ends meet. And yeah, so I don't really have a favorite one. It's just all of them, I think.
We've already spoken about it, but I would just like you to sum it up again. What are changes around money and finances that you would like to see in the Netherlands?
Definitely more space and more education for women, like taking women seriously in financial spaces, teaching women the importance of money, of having money, of building your wealth, of saving for retirement, of also being in charge of your finances and at least sharing the task of doing finances and doing taxes with their partner, being aware of what happens in the household financially, but also more education for everyone and more education for children in schools, and then more on the practical side. So how do you do taxes? How do you set up an investment account? How do you choose which investments you want to invest in? And finally, I also think, or I would like to see, wealth being distributed more equally in this country. Personally, even though I'm an investor, I'm not a fan of the fact that you are being taxed less on the things that you own, like houses or investments, than on the income that you generate from your 9-to-5, where you work so hard every day and you have to pay almost half of your income sometimes to taxes. Whereas if you have like a second house or an investment, you pay a lot less. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's even. And I feel like if you're an investor, you basically invest your money and then you can sit back and watch your money grow. You can pay more taxes. You're not doing anything. I feel like that could be a bit more equal.
How can people support you and your work?
Well, you can find me on Instagram and on TikTok. My account is called Jonelle Talks Money. And I also have the podcast called Op Je Money. My content and my podcast are in Dutch. It's not because I don't speak English, but because it is catered to the Dutch financial market and regulations. And for me, when I was on my financial journey, I listened to a lot of financial educators in America who did, well, like I said, I'm an English teacher. So most of what I read and watch online is in English. So I was watching these American educators, but they were talking about things like Roth IRAs and all the high yield savings accounts. And I was like, okay, but it doesn't apply to me. So that is why my content is in Dutch and the podcast is in Dutch. But if you're listening and you don't speak Dutch, but you do live in the Netherlands, just shoot me a message because I'm more than happy to work with you one-on-one. For one-on-one, I have a free workbook for getting a grip on your finances. I have a masterclass on investing. I also do one-time strategy calls. Like I said, I have a three-month program. So there's many options. So if you're interested, just shoot me a message and we'll see what's the best fit.
I will also make sure to put all the links in the show notes. That was a lot now, so people might get a bit overwhelmed. You can just read back there. It will all be there, I promise. What are your plans for the future? What happens next?
I have so many plans. The big plan is just to support and educate as many women as possible and be someone who helps bring that awareness and helps facilitate that education for women and just empower women in what I do and more practical. I'm doing so many things. I'm currently studying to become a certified financial advisor. I'm also hosting my first in-person event in January, which is really nice. And I'd love to do more in-person things in the future. I'm working on a new workbook that people can purchase and work through on their own. And I'm also working on a lesson series for high school students to improve their financial literacy. So yeah, there's a lot.
Janelle van der Wal, thank you very much. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you for having me. It was really fun being here.
And that's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for tuning in and for supporting this podcast. If you want to support Amsterdamus even more, there are several options to do so. You can check out the Amsterdamus Facebook page and leave a review. Depending on which podcast app you are using to listen to this podcast, you can also rate Amsterdamus there with a 5-star review. In Apple Podcasts, for example, it is possible. Of course, you can also follow Amsterdamus on Instagram. In case you would like to give me some feedback, or you know a person that needs to be interviewed for this podcast, you can send me an email. The email address is amsterdamuspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again and have a great day.